In this module, we continue examining our roles during the neonatal period by discussing monitoring dams and puppies. While moms are doing most of the work raising the pups, we need to keep tabs on her, including her body temperature, behavior, and breast health, the three Bs. And naturally, we're also checking on the pups regularly to ensure they're thriving. We do that by weighing, feeling, watching, and listening. Let's talk about each of these in greater detail. We're going to start by focusing on how we monitor our dams after whelping. Although body temperature isn't the only way to evaluate how a new mom is doing, it's a good starting place. Many whelping problems like metritis, mastitis, and eclampsia cause a fever. We can get a jump on heading off problems by checking our bitch's temperature twice a day. Her normal body temperature at other times is probably between 100.5 and 102 degrees Fahrenheit. But for now, expect it to be slightly higher. After whelping, it's common to see temperatures of 102 to 102.9 degrees Fahrenheit. However, if her temperature hits 103, it's time to call your vet. One of the things we shouldn't skimp on is the quality of thermometer we use. Thermometers are important equipment for breeders, so get two good ones and keep extra batteries on hand. Now, I'll tell you, I'm old school, so I still use a mercury thermometer, but they're difficult to find for really good reason, and they take a long time to get an accurate reading. Thus, I recommend you invest in a good quality digital thermometer for your bitches and puppies. There are lots to choose from, so how do you know if a thermometer is actually a good one? So we're looking for thermometers that are accurate, that they actually give us the right reading, and reliable. They can do that over and over again. This may seem obvious, but I came very close to doing a C-section on a bitch due to an improperly calibrated digital thermometer. Luckily, my vet took her temperature to confirm my report, and we found that she was perfectly fine. As a result, she was able to whelp on her own. We've not had good luck with ear thermometers, so we only use and recommend rectal ones. Rectal readings are the most accurate, and since we need to be absolutely sure of our girl's temperature, we don't think it's worth the risk. However, if you're adept at using ear thermometers, you're a vet or a vet tech, or you have a bitch that just can't tolerate you taking it rectally, then use what you're comfortable with. There are at least two agencies that validate the accuracy and reliability of digital thermometers, and those are the FDA and the American Society for Testing and Materials, or the ASTM. Look for thermometers that have met their standards. It's certainly easiest on our bitches if we have thermometers that read quickly. Rectal readings are typically pretty fast, but thermometers can still vary in the time it takes to get an accurate reading from 10 to even 50 seconds. So pick one that works more quickly than others. I also find it helpful to use thermometers that beep when they've reached the final temperature. It can be hard to see the readout, especially on coated breeds, so a sound alert can be helpful. However, if your bitch is sensitive to noises like that, you may want to get one without an alert. And finally, if you get a thermometer with a flexible tip, it will do double duty for both your bitch and puppies. These are usually more comfortable for the dogs, too. In Module 3, I spoke briefly about the need to prepare our bitches for the many procedures involved in breeding. Temperature taking is one of those, since none of us, including our dogs, enjoy it. We know that limiting our bitch's stress is important before and while she's raising her puppies, so ensuring that she doesn't get worried while we check her temperature is key. Now, how do we make temperature taking more tolerable for dogs? Well, as with most things, the way to a dog's comfort is through her stomach. Gradually condition your bitch using an assistant who's there to hold her head and feed her delicious treats like chicken or cheese, whatever she likes best. First, teach her to lie down, then roll on her side on command. Then, while she's on her side, teach her to allow you to move her tail around and mess with her rectum and her vulva. Once she's comfortable with all this, insert the thermometer just for a few seconds. And then, over time, gradually teach her to tolerate you inserting it about a half an inch and leaving it there long enough to get a reading. We'll be releasing a video showing how to do this soon, so stay tuned, and let us know if you'd like to be notified when it's ready. Next, we need to monitor the dam's behavior. Dog moms vary in how much they enjoy their puppies, but the vast majority are fully committed to caring for their pups for at least the first week and often the entire neonatal period. However, maternal behaviors can be confusing sometimes because although dams may be loving, they also may be rougher with their pups than we expect, as you can see here. During this period, even the most obedient bitch is often obsessed with her puppies, refusing to leave them and frantically trying to get back to them even after a short potty walk, and becomes very anxious if the pups are crying. Many bitches, even chow hounds, won't eat or drink while in the whelping box, while others won't eat or drink when they're away from it. You're going to have to find the balance there. New dog moms are often obsessed with cleaning their own and their puppies' genitals, and a normal bitch will lick, nuzzle, poke, and even retrieve her puppies. Sometimes she'll even hold them down with her feet so she can scrub them clean. Mothers naturally obsess about the pup's umbilical cords, licking and sometimes even dragging puppies around by them. Although normal, this can be really disconcerting for us. She might flip them over, often not too gently, and always, it seems, just after they've latched onto a nipple. And finally, it's perfectly normal for a bitch with newborn puppies to defend them against other animals and people. This may not be one of our favorite maternal behaviors, but she has put her body and soul into her pups for the last 2 months, and everything in her is prepared to defend them. Listen to and respect her to keep her and others safe. These behaviors tend to moderate as the pups reach 7 or 8 days of age, but initially, most moms are quite intense. What behaviors are abnormal, or as we call them, red flag behaviors? These are the behaviors that can easily result in the death or serious injury of puppies if we don't do something. First and foremost, any aggression towards neonate puppies is abnormal. Since newborns are blind and deaf, they can't read or respond to their mom's signals of discomfort, anger, or fear. They are completely helpless to heed her warnings, and she can't understand why they're not. It's a situation that will only end in tragedy if we don't step in. Maternal aggression in mammals is very rare for mothers that have given birth naturally, although it does happen. However, C-sections increase the rate of aggression towards young in dogs as well as other animals. So if you must do a section, be prepared to manage your bitch very carefully for the first day or two. Some dams aren't aggressive towards their puppies, but they simply won't allow them to nurse. These moms push their puppies away, or they move themselves out of the whelping areas to keep the pups from nursing. Other high-risk behaviors include digging, nesting in bedding, and trying to bury puppies. And lastly, bitches that move their puppies can unintentionally hurt them while doing so, or may leave them somewhere, allowing the puppies to get chilled. There are also behaviors that fall between normal and red flag behaviors, and they include both over- and under-mothering. Over-mothering typically entails obsessive licking that keeps the pups wet enough that they can get chilled, or actually causes sores, often on the pup's genitals. Under-mothering includes bitches that refuse to stimulate their pups to urinate or defecate, those that will tolerate their pups nursing but won't clean them or mother them, and mothers that actually push one or more puppies away from the rest. Although not as serious as actions we discussed earlier, these problematic behaviors make life tough for breeders and can put the pups at some risk. If you see aberrant behavior in your bitch, quick treatment is important. Bitches can injure puppies easily, intentionally or unintentionally. There's very little research or advice to help us with these issues in the short term. The advice to spay the bitch, which is the most commonly given, can be considered later, but when you have a new litter on the ground, it sure isn't the most helpful advice you can get. Here are some alternatives that have been successful for us and our students over the years. I've mentioned a few times before our use of calcium supplementation to stabilize our bitch's behavior. Although we usually require research for the vast majority of things we do with our dogs, we make an exception in this case because we can find no studies done on unusual behavior in new dog moms. We were introduced to supplemental calcium on the fabulous Canine Fertility, Reproduction, and Neonatal Issues Facebook group. The 9,300 breeders on this list, including us, regularly use calcium to quickly address strange behaviors in new moms. Now note, additional calcium is never given prior to the birth of the pups, since that can increase the risk of eclampsia later. But during whelping and once the pups are on the ground, calcium can be a lifesaver. We use calcium citrate, which doesn't need to be given with food, but you can also use calcium carbonate, for example, in Tums, if that's all you have available. Talk to your vet or connect with us or the Canine Fertility Group on Facebook for more details. If your bitch is particularly aggressive towards or disinterested in her pups and calcium isn't helping, take her to your vet as soon as possible. She might be sick with an infection or eclampsia, low blood calcium, both of which require immediate treatment. She also may have a hormone imbalance. Early in the neonatal period, treatment with oxytocin or other drugs may actually improve her mothering. In each case of dysfunctional maternal behaviors, management is critical. Muzzling an aggressive bitch or covering the pups of an overly attentive one can enable the puppies to thrive while you try to change the mother's behavior. If worse comes to worse, you can permanently separate the puppies from their dam. But for all the reasons we discussed earlier about the importance of mothering, that should be your last resort. Even very puppy aggressive bitches can be converted with control, management, and effort on your part. Don't give up, but also don't let your guard down. Since nursing is the ideal nutrition for puppies, ensuring our bitches' breasts remain healthy is in everyone's best interest. Dogs are unusual because they vary in the number of mammary glands they have from 8 to 12. Dogs can even have an odd number of glands, say 9, but most have pairs on either side. Mammary glands typically end in a nipple or teat, although they don't always. And these nipples usually have 8 to 20 openings through which milk flows. Sometimes there's even extra nipples on the same gland, which may or may not actually produce milk. The two primary issues we want to watch for is inadequate milk or infections of the mammary glands. Bitches can also get non-infectious sores from their puppy's nursing. These usually heal on their own or can be treated with a saline wash and lanolin, which are available at most drugstores and are safe for puppies. Now let's talk about inadequate milk production, which is a bit more challenging. If puppies aren't gaining weight each day, their dam may be producing too little milk. This can be the result of bitches that don't eat late in pregnancy or soon after the pups are born. It can be because it's an extraordinarily large litter, or it can happen for reasons that we simply don't understand. The first step to increase milk production is to ensure the bitch is on a balanced reproduction diet, as we discussed in Module 3.2. That includes grains. Dog milk has 4% sugars in it, which only come from the carbohydrates she eats. So for all of you anti-carb folks out there, this is a time that carbohydrates are important to your bitch and her puppies. Then increase the volume of the food you're feeding her. The highest demand on bitch's milk production is from weeks 2 through 4. I've heard that during week 3, producing enough milk for a large litter is the caloric equivalent of running 40 miles. I don't know if that's true, but my nursing bitches sure eat that way. If the pups still aren't gaining, but are not showing signs of being ill, then you can try two additional things. You can give her galactagogues, and you can supplement your puppies, or both. Galactagogues are things that promote lactation. They can be synthetic or plant-based. And although there's a growing body of research about galactagogues in people and cows, there's little in dogs. If you want to use these products, you'll have to make your decision based on the research in other species, some of which we've put into the additional resources section. Three natural sources that we know are safe in dogs include oats or oatmeal, which you can simply add as a source of carbohydrates for your bitch, fenugreek, and milk thistle. If all else fails to get your pup's weights rising steadily, you can supplement them. However, supplementing shouldn't be undertaken casually since there are no milk replacers that replicate dog milk. However, they're worth using if your pups are in trouble. Tube and bottle feeding are the two best options. Tube feeding is easy and safe for pups that are too weak to nurse. Neonatal puppies don't have a gag reflex, so tubing is not uncomfortable for them. Ask your vet or another breeder to teach you if you're unsure of how to do it. And we've linked to Myra Savant-Harris's excellent teaching video in the resource section. Bottle feeding is another option, although some pups are more resistant than others to taking a bottle. Obviously, this little guy from one of our litters of 13 was more than happy to take his bottle. That's one of Dr. Brown's preemie bottles, which we've had very good luck with, but there are other good bottles on the market. When you're bottle feeding puppies, be sure they can push against something, your hand or your leg, as you can see here, with their paws, and they will be more successful nursers. Now, feeding using cosmetic sponges has gained popularity lately. Our only concern with this method is that cosmetic sponges aren't made for animal or human feeding, so may contain toxins or other chemicals that are unsafe for puppies. Sponge feeding may work for your pups, but be sure to clean the sponges well before using them the first time, and then very carefully between feedings. So we know to use puppy's weight to determine if their moms have adequate milk. We also need to monitor her breasts for infections. Mastitis is an inflammation of the mammary gland, often but not always due to bacterial infection. Since dogs have so many ducts in each teat, there are many avenues for infection. One of the most important things a breeder can do to avoid infections is to trim and smooth puppy toenails so they don't scratch their mom while nursing. Clip or Dremel your pup's nails every 3 days, starting a few days after they're born. Not only does this reduce the risk of mastitis, but it also teaches the pups to be calm while having their nails done, which is a really big help to their new owners. In addition to giving your pups pedicures, observe them nursing every day. If you see them repeatedly avoiding a specific nipple, check it out. It may simply have less milk than the other glands, but it also may be developing a problem. How do we check? Well, give your bitch a thorough belly rub at least twice a day, running your hands over her breasts and feeling for any heat or unusual changes in the skin or feel of the breasts. Glands that are blocked or infected are usually hotter than other glands. They also may have an orange peel type appearance, like this one. They might feel or look like there's actually something firm inside of them, as you can see here, or they may actually have visible sores or abscesses. Caught early, many cases of mastitis can be treated by emptying the gland, either using stronger puppies or gentle stripping with your fingers, plus hot and cold compresses and, oddly enough, cabbage. Who knows why cabbage works, but there's limited support in human studies. Milk from the affected glands won't harm the puppy, so try to keep them nursing on it while you treat. However, if your bitch starts running a fever or is clearly feeling ill, get her to the vet for antibiotics quickly. Often the antibiotics are safe for puppies, but if she has a serious case of mastitis, you may need to wean them while she's on stronger drugs. Once she's feeling better and off the antibiotics, you can reintroduce the pups so she can interact with them, even if she doesn't start nursing again. So that's it for mom. Now what do we do about puppies? Well, there's four ways we should be monitoring our newborn puppies' health in addition to their moms. We weigh, feel, watch, and listen to pups to ensure they are progressing normally. First, weigh puppies twice daily until at least 3 weeks of age. Weight gains right after birth is one of the strongest predictors of neonate survival. Although pups might lose weight in the first 24 hours after whelping, they should start gaining by day two and continue steady weight gains until weaning. Write down the weights, circling the weights of pups that either stayed the same or even lost, so you can quickly see puppies that are in trouble. Pups that aren't gaining should be examined carefully for cleft palates or other physiological problems. If you're not experienced in checking pups over, take it into your vet or ask another breeder for help. We use private nursing time for pups that aren't gaining weight. Nursing is a demanding activity for puppies, and often small or weak pups will use more energy nursing than they're actually taking in. Private nursing sessions make it easier on the smallest pups because they don't have to fight to stay on a nipple. These pups are the smallest from a litter of 13 and are having a private session with their mother outside of the whelping box. And, as we discussed earlier, you can supplement pups that don't seem to be making ground otherwise. In addition to weighing, puppies need to be felt every day. Healthy newborns feel firm, plump, and vigorous. They're strong for their size and abilities. It's a strange thing to say, but they feel heavier than they look. If a puppy feels flaccid, limp, weak, or thin, it needs to be monitored carefully and checked for problems, and we'll talk in a minute about how to do that. Along with weighing and feeling the pups, you should watch each one every day. This sped-up video gives you an idea of how much puppies move, even while it appears like they're doing very little. If they're nursing, you want to see that they've formed a seal on the breast and are sucking with gusto. If they're sleeping, you want to see them twitching away, as we discussed in Module 4.1. If a pup is still or unable to nurse, you need to immediately evaluate it and decide whether your vet needs to see it. And finally, as we've said before, we should listen to the pups constantly to ensure that all is well. Quiet yet active is what pups should be like. In this video, you'll hear the music in the background, but the pups themselves are pretty quiet. Those yips and purrs are normal sounds of healthy puppies. Now, we talked a little bit about checking pups. What can you do? If you see a puppy that doesn't seem well, it's either crying all the time and you've tried the bathtub trick so you know it isn't too hot, or it's limp and inactive, check its body temperature. Be gentle, use lots of KY jelly when you insert the thermometer into its rectum, and remember that its temperature should be lower than an adult's. First week of a pup's life, its temperature should be 96 to 97 degrees Fahrenheit, and then week two, 97 to 98 degrees. Then check to ensure it's not dehydrated. All newborn pups' skin on the back of their necks will tent, and that's the way you're usually told to check to see if they're dehydrated. But it's better to check gums and urine to evaluate dehydration. Tap your finger gently against their gums. Their gums should feel moist and smooth. If they're dry or sticky, tacky, then the pup is dehydrated. You can also check a pup's urine color with a gauze pad. Neonate urine should be quite dilute, so it should be very light in color. If it's dark yellow, brown, or red, the pup is in trouble. Neonate puppies need more glucose than adult dogs. You can check a pup's blood glucose level with one drop of blood using a regular human glucose meter. To get that drop, I know this sounds terrible, but you're going to clip a toenail too short, and you're going to touch the strip to the blood that comes out. A blood sugar reading below 70 is too low, from 71 to 89 is equivocal, and above 90 up to 125 is normal. If any of these readings are out of the normal range, body temperature, hydration, or blood sugar, call your vet immediately. Each of these problems are treatable if the pup is not too far gone. Of course, if you have a puppy in trouble, get in touch with your vet immediately. Then start warming a chilled puppy using a warming box, incubator, or heating pad. If you have nothing available, put it inside your shirt against your skin. And dehydrated pups, or those with low blood sugar, can be given warmed fluids. Talk to your veterinarian or fellow breeders to learn how to do that.